Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 92-year-old Jimmy Weldon of Burbank, California. Born in Texas, he grew up in Oklahoma, served in Europe during World War II with the 1270th Engineer Combat Battalion. He also served as the voice of Yaki Doodle, the adorable little duck from the Yogi Bear show. And if you caught the beginning of our program today, you found out he can still do that voice at age 92. He also makes frequent appearances as a motivational speaker. Go to jimmyweldon.com if you'd like to book him, or I also have the links up for you at hometownheroesradio.com. The Center for Youth Patriotism is his nonprofit.
And I want to talk more about that, but I think it'd be interesting. I think our listeners would be interested to get your story and know where all of this came from, because clearly you're an amazing man with amazing energy and amazing talents, still going strong at 92. But take me back there. Take me back there to Oklahoma as a boy during the Great Depression. What was your life like back then?
Oh, Paul, thank you for saying that. I was 7 years old. I'm always talking about motivation. Key to success is motivation, having something to do. I wrote a book called Go Get 'Em, Tiger. And in this book, I always say, have a reason for getting out of bed, some reason for being. When I talk to AARP people my age, I say, I greet you in the name of Insurance Actuary Tables. We're all dead. They look at me and I say, wait a minute, we're all going to die. I was supposed to die 8 years ago. I want to tell you how to live. And they think, golly, that's different. But anyway, I tell these young people, plant a goal in your mind. Don't let anyone ever talk you out of it. The most important decision you ever make is planting a goal and deciding what you want to do. Secondly, to the commitment to your God. God's most important. But then second, be sure and know what you want to do. Have a reason, like I said. I was 7 years old and my two brothers took me to a movie, 10 Nights in a Bar Room. Now imagine a little seven-year-old boy going to a movie like that where the town drunk is a star and he's always at the saloon drinking and his little daughter, 3 years old, walks through the swinging door every day and say, Daddy, will you come home with me? Like Foster Brooks, yeah. And this one day, she walked through the door and called to her dad to come to him and the bartender's having a fight with him. He threw a bottle of beer at him, and he ducked and hit this little girl in the head, and I screamed, Mama! Mama! My two brothers had to take me home. Remember, Paul, I'm 92, but this was 85 years ago. I tell young people, remember, this computer of ours, our brain, is the most powerful piece of equipment that's ever designed. Everything you've ever seen, thought of, or done is in this computer. Not for instant recall. Because people like my age, we have senior moments. One guy said, the other said, I can't remember your name. She can't. No, but I don't worry, because at our age, we lose millions of brain cells every day. We do. Yeah, your name is in one of those I just lost. But anyway, back again, when I was that little boy, I can see that now. I was sitting on the floor crying, and I said, Mommy, he killed that little girl. She said, what little girl? I said, Mama, saw him, he killed her. She said, Babe, what are you talking about? And I tried to explain. Moving, she said, no, that was play-like. I said, play-like? Mama, I saw the blood in her head. And she said, no, that's probably ketchup. Well, as a seven-year-old boy, I said, okay, I can understand that. But then when she said, they probably gave her some milk and cookies after they did that scene. I remember sitting on the floor looking up at her, and I said, Mama, if it's me, I'd want some vanilla wafers. She said, they probably have those in Hollywood too, babe. Paul, never did I ever dream I would write a book one day called Go Get 'Em, Tiger. And the first chapter is The Witnessed Murder. Mama, he killed that little girl. What little girl? Mama, I saw him, he killed her. Babe, what in the world are you talking about? Almost 64 years have raced by since that little seven-year-old boy made those disturbing statements to his mother, who knelt down and tenderly wrapped her arms around him. Had no idea what she's going to say would crystallize my future. Yes, I was that little boy. Paul, God's blessed me in so many ways. You can't imagine. I've spoken to more National Management Association chapters than any speaker in the United States. I used to go all over everywhere. All these CEOs say, put on paper what you tell our people. I said, I just barely got out of high school. I don't care. Write it down. So I did write it. Mm-hmm. But then, wait, that's my chapter in my first book. First, the only one I've got, first chapter.
Well, maybe you should write another one.
No. They've asked me that. I couldn't. But anyway, from that moment, I wanted to be an actor. And I knew one day I was coming to Hollywood, California, heard a little boy going, "Oh, boy, oh, boy," one day. And I said, "Hey, that sounded like Donald Duck. What do you think it's supposed to sound like?" I don't know. I tried to imitate him. I couldn't make the sound. But finally, one morning, I went, "That's it." Out the side of my mouth. Then I tried so hard to make to speak. Finally, 12 years old, I answered my teacher in school one day. She asked me something. I said, "Yes, ma'am, yes, right." I had to stay in after school. On our 50th anniversary, our high school reunion, she walked up to me and she said, "Do you remember when I made you stay in after school for talking that duck talk to me?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, Miss Bailey." She said, "I was always afraid I might have inhibited you." I said, "You really hurt me." I'd answer the phone. "Hello?" If it's one of my brother's friends, I'd say, "Go see you." They'd grab the phone. "Mama, don't let him answer the phone. He's crazy. He embarrasses." But anyway, that's where it all started when I was a little boy.
So you started the duck talk as
that's a little boy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you said you wanted to be an actor from that point on, huh?
Yes. I knew what I wanted to do. And that's why I said, plant a goal in your mind. Don't let anybody ever talk you out of it. Because all of us are different. And when I speak somewhere, like in Pepperdine, I'll say, how what do you want to do? One of them says, "I want to be an attorney." "What do you want to do?" "I want to be a doctor. I want to be a so-and-so." And I say, "You see all the difference? We're all different." Then I say, "You are the most important person in the world. You know more about yourself than all the people in the world combined. And you're the only person you're never going to leave. So it's up to you. You can do anything you want to if you believe you can." My business card, Paul, at the top says, Mark 9:23, "If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth." We had a carpenter that used to walk on the streets of Galilee. He said time and time again, "As ye believe, so shall it be done unto you." It's so simple, we don't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
All we have to do is just ask.
I'm curious, with the Great Depression in Oklahoma, a lot of folks moved west. You know, in those times. Was life hard? Was it hard to get by? Did you guys have to get by with less than you wanted?
We didn't know what it was to not have something. We just didn't have it. Mm-hmm. I had my mom was, oh, how great. We had overalls, the little bib overalls that you put on, but they were always clean. Mom made sure that we were dressed clean. My dad had a service station, and he had to stay open 7 days a week, and it killed him because he wanted to go to church, but they made him stay open. And, a lot of my little friends didn't even know him unless they saw him with that Texaco uniform on. He had one suit, and he wore that when we could go to church together. But answering your question, you know, like I say, all of us, we didn't know what it was not to be poor. We just didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But Dad used to laugh, said, "My family has three meals a day, oatmeal, cornmeal, and miss a meal."
That's pretty good.
But let me give you something about my father. This you'll like. We used to say, "Dad, we love you, and Mom, we owe you so much." And Dad looked at us and said, "You owe us nothing. We owe you everything. So you're uninvited guests into this world. You didn't ask to be born. We asked for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you do something good, we can hold our heads up proudly and say, those are our boys. But if you do something ugly, we have to bow our head and ask forgiveness because we didn't teach you right." Now, what kind of parent says that today? Isn't that amazing?
A humble one with a lot of perspective.
Yeah, Dad, what a great man.
I guess so.
I know you're thinking about the war, and I was going to say, when I graduated, I was 17, and man, think about it. It was in 1941 when it all started.
Mm-hmm.
And so my two brothers were drafted in the war, and then when I had to go, I was the baby of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I went in the combat engineer 1st Division in Camp Swift, Texas, 146 combat engineers. It was a brand new battalion. And since it was so new, I got to make sergeant in the first 3 months that I was in the Army.
I got to ask you, before we get too far along in that, I bet your memory is so clear and so strong, as everyone can hear. I've got to believe you remember December 7th, 1941, and where you were and how you heard that news.
Oh, yeah, golly Moses, not possible. December 7th, 1941, it's almost like when I remember Kennedy when he was shot.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't believe it. We said, what it is, I'm just thinking, 1941, graduated from high school, just barely going, and We were all, we just didn't know. Mm-hmm. The news was going on, but there's no such thing as TV, as you know.
Yeah.
But we were all just, we heard rumors of this, that, and the other, and when that happened, it was like, golly, what's going on?
Shocked your system a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And what did your, so you had two older brothers?
Yeah.
What did they end up doing in the service?
Well, my oldest brother, Joe, was a crew chief for bombardiers.
All right.
And he worked on airplanes. The middle brother was in the Air Force. He wanted to go be a pilot. We both wanted to be pilots. But he didn't take the examination because he was afraid I might not be able to pass the examination. That's my middle brother.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't go in the Air Force because he thought, well, if my baby brother can't go, I'm not going to go.
Huh.
I went in the When the combat engineers took the Air Force examination, passed it, and called him, and he took it, and he went straight into the air from there.
But he didn't do it till you did it.
That's right. He waited for me. Oh, golly.
Well, and I know we're bouncing around here. So you told us you're in the engineers at Camp Swift, and then you find out that you can take this examination to qualify for flight training.
Went to Northfield, Vermont, and qualified for bombardier pilot and navigator. 3 days before pre-flight at Maxwell Field, Alabama, we were down there ready to go, and the Battle of the Bulge took place, and 36,000 of us were taken out immediately and gone back to our respective ground and service forces.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go back in. This time I was in the 1270th Combat Engineers.
And clearly the reason, and people who know their history can put two and two together, but the Battle of the Bulge, the reason that changed so much is there's so many casualties.
Right.
They need bodies to replace the bodies who
That's
are no
it.
Longer able.
Yes.
So all your ambitions of flying for our country are gone, and you're back in the engineers, and then they tell you you're heading overseas?
Yes. Yes, went straight over there, landed at Weston-super-Mare, England, stayed there for a little training, and went to Le Havre, France, went where we went in.
Mm-hmm.
Joined Patton Stern Army, combat engineers. Man, do you... No, I can't say it. Yeah, I can. Did you see Patton?
Sure.
You remember when he says, "Rommel, you magnificent son of a... Read your book!" Remember that line?
Yeah.
Man, that was him. Man, he didn't want to stop. He wanted to go right straight into Russia right now.
Yeah, he did. Yep. And there are some interesting theories about that. Did you ever see him? Did you ever come across him?
No. Well, just faintly, because we were moving all over. We were ahead building pontoon bridges and clearing minefields. That's what happened. But when he had those pearl handled pistols,
yep,
he wasn't saying, "You all going up there, I'll be there later." He'd say, "Come on, gang." He was up there in the front. Boy, a powerful man.
He had a gift of leadership and motivation, and certainly we know,
yes,
that's one of your gifts as well. But your task at the time as this young guy out of Oklahoma was, as you said, building pontoon bridges and clearing minefields.
We went through things, places, Paul, that the infantry hadn't even gone through because we were ahead of them getting things done. People look out the window, "Who are these guys? What are they doing coming here?" We were going so fast, we were 10 miles from the Czech border when the war ended.
Well, we don't want to go too fast and miss anything important, so let's catch our final break right here. If we run out of time, we're going to continue this one into our next episode because we have one pretty phenomenal storyteller with us today, don't we? Jimmy Weldon, 92 years old, of Burbank, California. Maybe you remember him as the voice of Yakky Doodle or even Webster Webfoot. Check out the photos and videos on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and at hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, go into your heart, you just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's RV Country within driving distance of this radio station. But really, it doesn't matter where you live, because Paul Everett has a fly and buy program that will fly you to any of his locations to buy your new RV. It's one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Serving RVers for 55 years, you'll find Paul Everett's RV Country throughout the West and online at rvcountry.com.